Working Cows Podcast, episode 183, bonus episode.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, here with another episode for you guys, coming to you with a bonus episode on April Fool's Day. I posted earlier today I was going to post a bonus episode, and that was not an April Fool's joke, but really excited to be joined today by Austin Hart of Red Summit Insurance. We're going to talk to him about pasture, rangeland, and forage insurance, and about some of the strategies that people are employing to make use of this product and how you can maybe employ it on your place. So this is kind of, you could say this is 5 months late, or you could say this is 7 months early. The sign-up period for that comes around in November, but we're going to get into all that with Austin here today on the Working Cows Podcast. Austin, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
I was fortunate enough to meet your parents at Ranching for Profit, and they were talking about the pasture, range, and forage. That's the name of it, right? The insurance that you guys are selling?
Yes, sir. Pasture, rangeland, and forage, PRF for short.
Right, yeah. So could you give me a little bit of a rundown of what PRF is and how it works, and what are some of the considerations that go into it?
Yeah, so pasture, rangeland, and forage, or PRF, is a rainfall index program. It's got a 70-year average on it. They split this average into grids, and then from the grids, they split that average into two-month intervals for each grid. Each grid, each interval has its own 70-year average. They get this average from the NOAA weather stations, and they've been using those to measure rainfall for a really long time, so it's pretty accurate. And they take an average of four of those, the four closest weather stations to that grid, to pull that 70-year average. And we use that information to custom make a policy. And then it's just from there, it's based on acreage, and you, however much acreage you run on, and this can be leased ground, a forest permit, BLM permit, state ground, anything that runs a cow. Doesn't matter how many cows you have, you could run one cow on 100,000 acres and you're still eligible for the program. You just have to have a cow. And then from there, it's a USDA subsidized program. So when you sign up for the program, you're on the hook for a premium. And that premium is based on acreage and which intervals you insure in. It's a combination of a lot of different things where they get that premium, but typically it's usually about $1 an acre premium. And consistently you're seeing returns of $1 over the premium.
No, how long has the PRF been around, do you know?
Been going for about 8 years, I believe.
Okay.
So it might be the ninth year now.
Yep. And kind of a tool to manage risk. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. We call it a risk management program.
And so how does somebody go about getting started with the program, and what are some of the strategies that you guys have been employing and in helping people get started?
We rely heavily on our marketing. We have a department in our company that just heavily markets, and we do that through mostly mail, some online, and one can learn more information about it through our website, redsummit.com, redsummit.com. And there's lots of helpful links on there. We have question and answer videos from some of our agents within the company that answer some of the basic questions about the PRF program. And people can get a hold of me to ask more questions as well. And my phone number is 307-343-5670. You can also email me, austin@redsummit.com.
And so this is something that is used year round, something that people can would buy coverage for different months out of the year. Do you pay the same premium for each month, or does the premium change kind of relative to the amount of moisture that you would typically get in that month? How does that work?
Yeah, so it runs from January 1st clear to the end of December. The premium is once you're signed up for the program, you know what your premium is. There's no money due up front. You're not paying a monthly deductible. Your premium is not due, and it does not change until September. And that premium, we don't make it due until September. That way we give the program a chance to work, because you're looking at, if you have January, February is an interval, March, April is another interval, May, June is another interval. That's already three chances for that program to work if those intervals are below average in rainfall. And that'll deduct off of your premium. So then hopefully the goal would be by September, you know, you're not having to pay a premium and you're looking at getting a check for not having any feed to put weight on your calves.
Sure. So it's kind of like Black Friday. you're spending all year operating in the red somewhat, you know, as that's what businesses are doing, you know, and then Black Friday is kind of the first day that they operate in the black. So September, hopefully by September, that program's had a chance to work where the premium's been paid by all the indemnity that would have come in up to that point. And then after that, for lack of a more eloquent way of putting it, it's all gravy after that point.
Right. It doesn't necessarily pay it off by September. There's sometimes if in one interval, you can pay that whole premium, and you're looking at typically the time frame to get a check. So if you had January, February, it paid your premium and you paid in excess of that premium, that indemnity did, then you would be looking at getting a check 30 to 60 days after that interval ended.
Mm. So checks are paid out throughout the year. Is that right?
As soon as the premium is paid off, yes.
Gotcha. Interesting. And so is this available in all 50 states? I guess that's a question I should ask.
I believe in 48 states at the moment.
Okay.
So Alaska and Hawaii, I don't think are included.
Sure. Gotcha. That makes sense. The company itself, have you guys been working with a broad swath or mostly in the Great Plains, or what kind of producers have you guys been working with?
Pretty much all over. So from California, and I think the furthest east we've gone is Kansas so far. And north, we've been clear up into Montana, down into and then clear down south, New Mexico, Arizona area. So we're spread out pretty far. The majority of our agents are based out of Utah. We have one in Arizona. But we all just kind of respect each other and go as far as we can to help as many people as we can. Our company's motto is keeping families on the land. And that's kind of what, that's kind of what I strive to do. And the goal I have in my mind as I sell it, because we lost our family ranch basically to drought, and it's a hard thing to make it through some years. And this is just kind of an opportunity for ranchers to manage that risk and hopefully keep the ranch and their family for generations to come.
Do you think that this is a tool that is more suited to an arid environment, or is because it's based on all these different monitoring stations that are local to each individual's ranch, it's kind of tailored to work well in all the different areas of the country?
I will not say that it works everywhere. I have found places where it does not, and I don't really push the program to those people if it's not going to work for them. Wyoming, some places in Wyoming is where I've ran into that a lot. you're paying a premium 50 out of 50 years and you're basically just coming out even. Mm. And so there's not a lot of purpose to be on the program unless it is to help, unless you do need that help through the dry year and make enough on a wet year that you feel comfortable with it. But there is lots of room as of now, before if any changes are implemented, there's lots of room to play and try to tailor make a policy for that ranch.
And typically the people that you're working with, are they insuring all 12 months out of the year? Are they using a different strategy?
It just kind of depends on the area and the location. The historicals on the intervals. I've insured lots of people just in 8 months, and I've insured a lot of people in 12. So it just kind of varies. And everybody, we all know as ranchers that January and February could be really wet, and then March, April are typically more dry. So, and I talk about that with the ranchers I come in conversation with. I say, well, do you have months that you notice are more dry or have been dry being here? And typically their answers correspond exactly with what the numbers show on my software.
I guess, how would you recommend people get involved, or what are some of the ways that people should think about putting this to work on their place?
I would advise, I might be biased, but getting in touch with our company, one of our agents. We've got lots of experience, lots of ranching background within our company. We've been going for 4 years now. This might be five. And the guy who started the company, he started it. He got on the program, and it dug him out of a deep hole that he was in. And he started the program to help other people. He's like, holy cow, that helped me a lot. So I wonder how many other people I can help. And so, yeah, it's getting in touch with us would be a great first step.
Sure. Sounds good. Can you share with me some stories or some examples of different ranches and policies that you've worked personally with? I mean, you don't have to give names, of course, but just kind of some different broad 30,000 foot level view overviews of kind of how it's worked out in different situations and scenarios you've been involved in.
Yeah, I sure can. I'll just start with saying this. Steve, he's the owner of the company. When he first came to me saying, hey, I have this great program that I want you to sell to ranchers. And I laughed at him and I said, I don't think you can sell anything to a rancher. And he's like, no, it works for him. And I made him sit down with me 3 or 4 times before I finally gave in and decided to do it. And I had been working with the software after I finished all the tests and stuff. And he's like, I want you to come with me on a sales call. And I said, okay. And it was a guy he had just insured that year. And the guy had just bought his ranch. And so he was pretty nervous about signing up for the program because you could be on the hook for that premium if it's not dry. And so I went with him, and when we met that guy, he literally had tears in his eyes because we delivered him a check for the drought insurance, and he had tears in his eyes saying, this has helped me so much. And that was kind of my eye opening of, wow, this program actually does help people. And Steve told me later when we got back in the truck, he's like, you don't know how many people have almost broke down in tears just because we've helped them so much out of bankruptcy. And it's pulled a lot of people out of holes. So it's a touching experience to help people.
Yeah. Yep. And that's kind of, you know, one of the things we talk a lot about on the Working Cows podcast is that the number one nutrient that we're managing is water. That, you know, we should be managing our soil's ability to hold on to water and the soil health and all of those things. But ultimately, if it doesn't rain, and there's no water to capture and no water to hold on to, then we've got to figure out some ways to manage that risk. And a lot of different ways that we can do that, destocking, but that can be a hit as far as cow depreciation or selling into a down market already. So this is kind of one of those things that I guess I look at it as a tool that can come in behind some of the other strategies that we have in place, and help with some of the risks that exist just as part of being in the business that we're in.
Right. No, I tell everybody the whole business we're in, ranching, it's a risky business. So adding one more element of risk to that to help manage and eliminate some of that risk, I feel is a step in a positive direction.
Any other things that you want to share as far as the pasture, range, and forage is related, or any other examples that you think of as far as ways that people are using the policies?
A lot of people are using the policy to help build their ranch more. They're able to increase numbers. They're able to buy hay when it's dry. One of the things I always say is when everybody looks at all the paperwork I present to them and they're just staring at it and looking at me like a deer in headlights, a lot of times you're in disbelief and it's hard to get away from that premium amount. But I just tell them the premium amount I would look at this way: how much would you pay to make it rain? And I'm sure if you asked a rancher in the middle of the summer and it hasn't rained for 2 months and they're looking at skinny cows, can't buy hay, you would pay a lot of money just to make it rain.
Yeah, but you're talking $1 an acre, right? I mean, that's
yeah, it's very little.
So. Right. Yeah. What about you? Like, how do you think about maybe how this might enable you to get into your own ranch business? What are you thinking about as far as this is part of that strategy and a tool to help you?
I'm planning on using it to as a way to help get my own ranch. It's been a goal of mine since I could walk and talk. And I know it's a thought that's been in my brain and burned into my brain my whole entire life is to have my own ranch, my own cows. And everybody tries to, when they're looking at ranches, you try to think of ways to make the ranch pay with just the cows. But anymore, that's kind of hard to do when all your inputs are increasing at a constant rate and cattle prices are not. And so it's kind of hard to make a $4 million ranch pay with 100 head of cows that it'll run. I kind of look at this as an opportunity to add to another aspect to help pay for that ranch. And granted, there's still the risk of, hey, if it's a wet year, what happens? But if it's a wet year, it's going to be kind of hard to gripe when the cows are fat, calves look good. So it's just, I think it'll be a good addition to help pay for a ranch.
Anything you can do to help get started, you know, take a little bit of the risk out of getting started. Dallas Mount shares often, I guess I've seen him share often, the idea that, you know, kind of the most risky business to be in is a startup business. And so when you're in a risky business of ranching already, then to add to that the risk of being a startup, this is just another tool maybe to help mitigate that risk, maybe more than a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it all depends. In some areas, it works really, really well. So, but with that, you also have the downfalls of it being really, really dry. Right.
Yeah. Softens the blow a little bit, but it's still no fun to be dry.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So, well, we will have a link up to the website in the show notes page. And if you want your phone number published there too, I can put that up there as well. Could you tell me a little bit about kind of your story, your history, about your background as it relates to ranching? You said you've wanted to do this since you can walk and talk. What kind of ranching operations or what kind of operation have you been a part of thus far?
Yeah, I sure can. It's kind of a long story. I'll try to shorten it.
We got time.
I blame my dad for that one. No, I was born and raised in Arizona on a family ranch that we had. And like I said, we lost that And since then, my dad's always managed ranches, and so I've grown up watching him manage ranches. And left Arizona about the third grade and went to Kansas and was there for about 4 years. Dad was managing a ranch there. And we ended up coming back to Arizona. We weren't ranching at that time. Dad was selling real estate. And then from there, we ended up going to Nevada, and we were on that ranch for about 5 years. And then that's kind of where I spent most of my high school, was in Nevada on that ranch. And then from there, my senior year, we ended up moving to Utah, and Dad was managing another ranch. And so I've seen firsthand the struggles of ranching, struggles of being a ranch manager, and the daily struggles that you face with cows, with drought, with rainfall, sickness, anything that we face as ranchers. Then after I finished high school, I went to Wyoming and managed a little operation. And it's mostly, we did a lot of intensive grazing. And while I did that, I also got my associate's degree in business. And from there, I moved to Laramie, Wyoming, and went to the university and got my degree in ag business, and was pursuing a job as a ranch manager, and had quite a few offers that Stephen turned me away from to start selling this stuff and helping. So it's been a wild ride, but yeah, I love ranching, love the people in ranching. It's all I want to do. I know that. And I still help Dad on this ranch that he's managing now. And it's a good, when I get tired of paperwork, I just say, "Hey Dad, what do you got for me to do?" And so I end up building fence or catching cows. So
it's a good balance.
Yeah. Good balance.
How has your experience, kind of broad experience, I guess, that you've had, kind of interesting from Kansas to Arizona to New Mexico, Utah, Wyoming, you know, a lot of the Great Plains, a lot of the Southwest. How has that experience shaped your view of ranching?
Well, it really made me love the mountains. Being in Kansas was way too flat. But it's just kind of given me an insight on a lot of different types of ranches. I'm not going to say I know them all. Every operation's different, but I've seen cows run from 4,000 feet clear up to 12,000 feet. And so it's just been a unique experience, and it allows me to relate to a lot of different ranchers in those experiences.
How have the cows been different in those areas? Have they all been, you know, black-hided British breed cattle, or have there been a lot of different types of cattle that you've been around?
The majority of cattle I've been around are Black Angus, but we have, like, our ranch in Arizona was all Corianis, and it's pretty rough, tough country, and a Coriani can live off dirt, so.
Yeah.
So those are kind of the main experience of cattle I've had.
Yep. And Nevada was also Angus cattle?
Yep, mostly Black Angus.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, any other observations just from that kind of breadth of experience as far as different states and how things are done, and you know, anything like that sticks out to you from your experience?
The cold varies. it gets pretty cold here, but I don't think it quite gets as cold as it did in Kansas. There's something about the humidity that really makes it cold.
Yeah, no doubt. I went to Bible school in southeast Wisconsin, just outside of Milwaukee, and that was a whole different kind of cold after growing up in western South Dakota, where it's 15 inches of moisture a year, you know, 14, 15 inches of moisture a year, and that cold, that wet cold just go right through you. So different kind of...
Play to the bone.
Yeah, for sure. Where were you at in Kansas?
Right around Hayes, Kansas is a big town.
You're the second guy I've talked to today from near Hayes, Kansas. So
yeah,
yeah, we were, my wife's family is south east of there quite a ways. They're down south central Kansas. So I've been down in that country, and we always usually stop in Hayes to stretch our legs a bit before we finish the drive out. But anyways, yeah well, good stuff. Appreciate the time and kind of you sharing some of your experiences with us. What was your experience on the intensive grazing in Wyoming?
It worked really well. You know, it's a lot of electric fence, which you get shocked enough, I think you get better with it. But it allowed us to run way more numbers than you probably should have been able to. But it was also on all irrigated acres, so that makes a huge difference when you can rotate cows off of a section and then throw water right on top of it.
Right.
Let that grass grow back a little bit before you get back to that section.
Yeah, what part of Wyoming were you in?
Fort Bridger, Wyoming. It's in the southwest corner.
Okay, gotcha. So a little bit of mountain runoff irrigation?
Yep, yeah, mostly all came from the Uintas there.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And was that a cow-calf deal or custom grazing stockers and those kinds of things?
A lot of cow-calf. It was probably split pretty evenly between cow-calf and then outside stockers.
Hmm. And what percentage of the years were they grazing on irrigated ground, or percentage of the year?
50%, roughly. Gotcha.
Huh. Yep. And then have some like Forest Service leases or something for the rest of the year?
Nope. So all summer they were there in Wyoming for about 6 months. And then those other 6 months we'd go down by Salt Lake, and that's where they'd spend the other 6 months.
Huh.
And it was another all irrigated acreage deal.
Oh, really?
But hard to irrigate in the wintertime down there.
Yeah.
But it's a lot warmer than Wyoming.
Sure. I mean, you can irrigate and grow some good stockpiled forage for them, though.
Yep. Yeah. You didn't have to feed very much, only if it snowed a lot, which didn't happen very often. And they were able just to graze. And yeah, not much. We put up some hay, but didn't have to cut to sell it rather than feed it. So.
Were you involved in that operation for, you know, multiple months, multiple years, or just one season, or?
About 2.5 years.
Oh, nice. So you got to see the whole rotation. Did you travel with the cows then?
Yep. I'd go to Wyoming in the summer and Salt Lake in the winter. And I much preferred Wyoming. So. We were too close to the city.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Interesting. Well, very good. Anything else you want to say regarding pasture, rangeland and forage or anything like that?
I think I feel like I did a pretty good job explaining it, but I sometimes get a little nervous on these kind of deals and I skip over some good facts, but
sure.
I would love to talk to anybody about it and seeing if it works for their operation. And I'm not going to force feed anybody who it's not going to work for. So
sure. No, I appreciated the opportunity to look over the program a little bit today and kind of see what it could do on our place and something that we're going to pursue. I guess one thing we should talk about a little bit is the sign-up period and what that looks like. This will be out in the first part of April of 2021, but it'll be up forever so people can find it anytime and they might check it out. So could you tell me a little bit about how the sign-up process works?
Yeah. As of right now, the sign up is still November 15th is the application and acreage report deadline. The application is just kind of your first step to saying, yeah, I want to do the program. And then the acreage report tells you exactly which intervals you're insured in, how much acreage, what your premium would be, what your subsidy percentages, all that good stuff. And as of right now, we just need all that paperwork in and signed before November 15th. That's kind of the deadline.
Sure. I guess one of the misconceptions I had was that it had to be like Forest Service land was ineligible. I don't remember if you mentioned that on the episode or not, but I had a misconception that Forest Service land was ineligible or land that you leased maybe by the head, you had to lease it by the acre. I I thought I'd heard that that was ineligible. So I guess just to reiterate, if we've already talked about it, but what land is in what land is eligible, and then kind of are there any things that will exclude you from being able to use the program? For example, grassland CRP or CSP, conservation stewardship programs, or EQIP programs, anything like that.
Right. So any ground that you run a cow on is eligible for the program, whether that be leased, and that can be leased from a private party, from BLM, Forest Service, or state ground. All of that ground is eligible. As far as the CRP, CSP ground, I believe it is eligible. I haven't found anything saying that it's not. It doesn't interfere with NAP insurance, so I don't think it would interfere with those conservation programs.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, well, we'll have links in the show notes page for today where people can go and find you there, and we'll send some people your direction, hopefully. So thanks for your time today, Austin.
Thank you.
Good stuff there. I really appreciate Austin taking time to sit down and go over that stuff with me and also to share a little bit of his story, and encourage you to check out the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/183, and get in touch with Austin if you're interested in learning more about that. His contact information will be linked there at the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/183. Next up on the Working Cows podcast, coming your way early next week, we will have an episode with the folks behind Native Microbials. We're going to talk to them about what they are doing to supplement rumen health in ruminant animals, specifically beef cattle, and how they're doing that strategically to get the biggest bang for the buck. So if you're interested in that, tune in next week real soon for another episode of the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.